Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Golden Black Radio as we take a look at this week in Purdue Athletics. Here's your host, Kyle Charter. The Boilermakers scored another big victory Saturday with another big second half. We'll break down the Big Ten's youngest team, how it's climbed the top half of the league, that and much more on Gold and Black Radio. Kyle Charters here with Brian Newbert. We'll bring in Tom Dienhart in a couple of minutes, talk a little bit of football with him. Brian, though, let's start with the basketball team, now 7-4, a little farther than halfway through the Big Ten as we turn the calendar over to February. They'd be a little bit farther than that if they had played the Nebraska game. That Nebraska game, by the way, that postponed sort of the turning point in the season, right? So you have a game postponed, you get a little extra time, and all of a sudden Purdue has won 5 of 6 or whatever it is since then. Not sure you can really point to that date, but it does work out that way.
Yeah, Purdue was doing okay, though, before the postponement. You know, they had been very competitive at Rutgers and Illinois. I think they showed a lot more than they showed last year in those types of games. And I thought you kind of saw a team back then that was kind of learning how to win. And I think that it was just a matter of time before they broke through. And sure enough, after that postponement, I think it was Michigan State, right, after the postponement, which was the first game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that might have just been as much the natural progression of things as it might have been, you know, the actual postponement. It also didn't hurt that Michigan State's got some real issues this year. But I think, you know, Purdue has really come along quickly here. You know, the youngest team in the Big Ten has the same Big Ten record as the oldest team in the Big Ten. You know, Wisconsin's older than the Golden Girls here. And, they're both 7-4 in the Big Ten. You know, Purdue's just way ahead of schedule. They're playing with, you know, a poise you don't expect, you know, from teams that are this new, especially being shorthanded Saturday night again without Sasha Stefanovic. You're even younger, and there have been a number of instances, the halftime at Michigan State, you know, early on against Penn State, obviously after the first 9 minutes when Minnesota was shooting out of its you-know-what, where this team could have, you know, kind of gone sideways like last year might have, and it didn't. They just don't seem fazed by things, and that speaks volumes about just how far ahead of the game not only are they from a results perspective, but from, I guess, like a maturity perspective and sort of things like that.
Yeah. I'm sure Wisconsin, by the way, appreciates you dubbing them the Golden Girls. Is Brad Davis and Blanche, is that what we're going with?
Well, I don't know about their social habits, so it would be hard for me to designate them. But I can't say I put more than 2 seconds of thought into that. That just kind of came out, so I haven't quite categorized it yet. But if they all come back next year, like
that can't
happen. I wouldn't think, but they would be older than like the coaches in the league.
Yeah. So you mentioned maturity with Purdue, and I mean, it is interesting to see, especially without, you know, one of its more mature players in Sasha Stefanovic these last couple of games, these guys play with that. I mean, it has to be one of the main reasons, talent being another one, but one of the main reasons why Purdue has played so well in second halves of these games and been able to rally from down. And on Saturday, not only rally from down, but rally from down to, you know, beat a team in a blowout. You know, it's been pretty impressive how Purdue has finished. You sort of expect that from teams, you know, like a Wisconsin or a veteran squad, which Purdue has had in the past, but maybe not so much from a team that is, you know, aside from what, two, three guys playing a bunch of underclassmen, many of them freshmen.
Yeah, and that's kind of a double-edged sword. I mean, it's great that you're really good in the second halves, but you would obviously prefer to be better in the first halves on average. That's, I think, probably just the inconsistencies that were bound to come with this team's aggregate experience level. As Painter said, I think, after the game on Saturday night, he ought to give his halftime speech before the game instead. because that's kind of the way it's trended this year where, you know, the Michigan mm-hmm. State game, they're down, what, 15 at the half. They scored 16 points in the first half or something like that. And then obviously the game the other night where they were really good in the first half, or they weren't so great in the first half, although a lot of that had to do with Minnesota being inordinately good in the first half, at least in one phase of the game. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, on the other side of the coin, how long ago was it at Miami where you were damn near perfect in the first half and then you completely curled up in a ball in the second half? That's kind of the thing about yeah. this team that really stands out is they actually learn from that game, I think, because it's you're seeing it now. You're seeing some good having been taken probably from that game, whereas last year the same thing happened to Purdue at Marquette, and it never seemed to make a difference. And the troubling right. thing early this season seemed to be that, you know, those who came back from last year's team didn't learn from that Marquette game. But they didn't learn from that Marquette game this year. But now this team this year seems to have,
mm-hmm.
you know, taken care of some things, shored some things up after that Miami game, because the same thing hasn't even remotely come close to happening.
Yeah.
You've been really good in second halves. You'd like to be better in first halves, but maybe that's something, you know, they just kind of grow into over time. This was never going to be, you know, a straight line of greatness for Purdue. There was always going to be some peaks and valleys here, and there have been surprisingly few
yeah.
valleys. There were a couple bumps in the road early in the season, but, you know, Purdue has dealt with a lot of crap this year too in terms of guys coming and going. So there's all sorts of different
yeah.
avenues of causation here that can be mentioned as well that I won't bore you with. But I think there's just still a little bit of inconsistency of youth here, but there's been way more good than bad, and that's really notable considering how difficult the Big Ten is this year. This is a league that could have taken a young team and, you know, chewed them up and spit them out, and it's sort of been the opposite.
Yeah. You wrote about Trevion Williams this morning and how, you know, his contribution certainly should not be overlooked and shouldn't be overlooked in the context of the Big Ten, which has several good big men. I made this comment on Twitter a couple of weeks ago. I wanted to get your take on it as well. It reminds me a little bit of years ago, you used to talk about Carl Landry in terms of Carl will be really good when he starts to believe that he's really good. It seems to me
yeah.
you could make a comparison with Trevion Williams in that regard too. Like, Trevion will be really good when he starts to believe he'll be really good. And clearly he started to believe that he'll be really good.
Yeah, I think he's had to get in shape more than anything, and I think he's getting in better
yeah.
shape as the season goes on. Keep in mind, this was a very non-traditional offseason that I think was harder on larger people whose conditioning matters more than it was on smaller people. And I think when you saw him maybe missing some shots early in the season that he normally makes, might have been something to be said for the fact that he wasn't in great shape coming into the year. I think, too, that, you know, over the course of time, he's really grown up. And when he got to Purdue, he was really, really young for his age. And I think he's, you know, the natural progression of time, people growing up,
mm-hmm.
I think he's really come a long way in a short period of time here. There were some inconsistencies with him on the floor and off the floor the past 2 years that, you know, seemed to be out of his system. He's trying to do all the right things. It seems like he's really trying to be a leader, it looks like, from afar. I mean, I don't have the same proximity to the team I normally would, but everything I've seen, everything I've heard has been very positive in that sense. I think he's just growing up, and I think he's learned to be consistent personally and, you know, as a player. I just think he's giving Purdue everything it needs from him right now,
yeah.
and I think he deserves more credit for it, because I think it's easy to overlook him because there's so many good big people in the Big Ten, and Purdue's newcomers draw so much attention because people are so excited about the future, while the present's so bright too. But part of the reason the present's so bright is because Trevion Williams has become the player Purdue's always wanted Trevion Williams to be. And it just feels like Purdue as a whole is not getting the same credit that it would, it ought to be, because, like, I watch Big Ten basketball, obviously, a lot. It's kind of my job. And I hear people talking about how hot Ohio State is, but they never mention, yeah, but look at Purdue. Purdue beat them twice.
Yeah.
I hear people still bending over backwards to give Wisconsin credit for being so experienced and so wise, and, you know, all of that stuff, where their experience shows up when they're fouling. They're fouling the right guy at the end when they're down 10 at Penn State, which seems like a backhanded compliment. But I don't hear anybody on these other broadcasts ever talking about, man, how about Purdue or how about Travion Williams? It's all Luka Garza. It's all IO for good reason.
Yeah.
Those guys are unbelievable players, but I don't see people paying attention to Purdue the same way they're gushing over Ohio State, or they're gushing over Wisconsin, or they're gushing over Iowa. Maybe they ought
to. Yeah.
You know, I don't think Purdue's going to win the Big Ten yet, but I don't think anybody expected, you know, Purdue to be 7-4 in the Big Ten at this point. Again, effectively 8-4 because you didn't get that Nebraska home game yet. I mean, Purdue's just been one of the great success stories probably in college basketball. And they're probably going to be in the top 25 today, I would think, and that really, really says something for a team with, you know, the least experience of, you know, damn near anyone at this level.
Yeah. Yeah, and the AP Top 25 will come out here a couple hours after we record this podcast. We'll see if some others start to notice. I would imagine that they would. I mean, Purdue has won 5 of 6. You mentioned they've beaten Ohio State a couple of times. 3 of those were against ranked opponents, though one of them was Michigan State, which probably should not have been ranked. But yeah, we'll see. I think, you know, one more without Stefanovic here at Maryland, which is one of the more bizarre teams, I think, in the Big Ten this year. The Terps can win on the road, have not won at home, though they have played good teams at home. You know, Maryland's a team that sort of, even though it's 3-7 in the league, you know, if it wins a couple of games here, might be in for some NCAA tournament consideration. You know, this will not be an easy task for Purdue on Tuesday night.
Well, my stance on the Big Ten is judge everyone by their best, because everything is so warped by the parity in this league and just the absolute, you know, quagmire this team or this conference is, that when you look at Minnesota and they haven't won on the road, okay, well, for them to have not won on the road is to say they have not beaten a top 20 team on the road, because all the teams they had lost to were top 20 teams in the country when they played them.
Mm-hmm.
To say Maryland can't win at home, you know, that I don't think that's accurate. I think it's they've played 4 great teams at home and just haven't happened to beat any of them. Had they played, you know, Nebraska, Northwestern,
Nebraska,
Indiana.
It was postponed.
Whoever
the Nebraska game for them was postponed too. Yeah, I mean, they would have won that game.
Yeah,
it got postponed.
But had they played, you know, and it's hard for me to even come up with 4 teams in the Big Ten where I'd say if they played these teams instead of these teams, they'd be 4-0 instead of 0-4, because it's hard to come up with those teams where you know you're gonna, when you have them at home, you have a pretty good chance of winning. It's just, this league is such a steel trap that you have to look at all of these teams at their best. You have to look at Maryland as the team that won at Wisconsin, that won at Minnesota. You have to look at Minnesota as the team that beat Michigan and beat Iowa, regardless of where those games were played, because that's showing you what they're capable of. And that's another part of what has made Purdue's success so interesting here. They haven't, you know, slipped up against the Penn States. They haven't slipped up against the Minnesotas, except for Michigan, which I will remind you once again, they played on 2 days practice without a big piece missing on short notice. Who knows how that game would have turned out otherwise. They've been really good at home, and they've just been finding ways to win. You know, when they couldn't score in the first half against Minnesota, they got offensive rebounds and they got to the foul line. They have this resourcefulness to them. They have this resourcefulness about them that seems to belie their age. And in a league like this, that's what you have to do. You have to find ways to win sometimes. And that is exactly what Purdue's been able to do. They've got this weird survival instinct about them in this absolute Hunger Games of a basketball conference, and that's what's just so impressive about what Purdue has done so far.
One more, and we'll get to Tom talk a little bit of football. You mentioned Purdue has not played Nebraska yet. Do you anticipate that game being made up in other games across the Big Ten? It just seems almost impossible at this point. I mean, the Cornhuskers have missed, what, like 6 games? Michigan will have missed 3 or 4. Penn State missed several. I mean, it seems impossible that these games could get made up in basically, what, the next 4 weeks.
It seems impossible, but they have to figure something out because you can't have, in my opinion anyway, you can't have a legitimate championship. And I know the big picture here is just having a season. I understand that. I'm not losing sight of that. But this isn't Major League Baseball where it's okay to have one team play 155 games and one team play 162 games and say, okay, winning percentage is cool. You know, if Purdue loses two games against Nebraska or whatever it is, what if Nebraska opts out? You know, has anybody thought of that? I don't think that's going to happen. I have no reason to think that's going to happen, but you never know. What are you going to do? Because you can't award a championship to a team that played 20 games or to a team that played 16 games and somebody else played 20. It's hard to award a championship to Michigan. I don't know what their scheduling looks like, so I'm just pulling that name out of a hat. You can't give Michigan, you know, a Big Ten title if they played Nebraska twice, but Purdue didn't. And I'm not saying Purdue's going to compete for the Big Ten title. I'm just saying that stuff matters too. It's not just about, you know, getting your games in against the top teams in the Big Ten. It's about getting played the games that round out your record. And, you know, from NCAA tournament qualification perspectives too, that stuff matters. That win total still matters. I just don't know how you're going to do this. My opinion is that, and I don't think this is going to happen because I know the wheels are in motion here on actually having the thing. My opinion is to cancel the Big Ten tournament, to backload the season with marquee games for TV, and just extend the regular season for another week to give yourself the best chance to get these games in. You can get a few more in the regular framework of the rest of the regular season, but then that gives you another week to get two or three games in for everybody. I have no reason to think that's going to happen. That's just my opinion anyway. I don't think anybody wants anything to do with a Big Ten tournament this year, that's for sure. Nobody wants to jeopardize the NCAA tournament. It doesn't matter all that much. There's no fans. There's no real benefit to having a Big Ten tournament this year. You run the risk of putting 14 teams in the same building. One of them gets a positive test. Oh, my God, season over. You know, it's just not worth it this year. And what you can do to get those regular season games played seems like the way to go here. But I don't know if the Big Ten's going to do that or not. That's just my opinion.
Well, Michigan's decision was out of its hands. It wasn't even its decision. The state health department shut it down. What if it comes in again?
It was the university's decision to follow the state recommendation. It was in the University of Michigan's hands. It wasn't in, you know, Juwan Howard's hands. It wasn't in, you know, the athletic director's hands. But, I mean, that's 2020-2021 for you. I mean, you know.
The point being, what happens if it only plays two more games and finishes 10-1? I mean, is it the Big Ten champion? I don't know.
Yeah.
That would be difficult.
It would be the most – I mean, not to say Michigan's not deserving because they're the best team in the Big Ten. They're one of the best teams in the country. But that would be the most illegitimate regular season title in the history of the Big Ten. The games are even more unbalanced than the normal unbalanced Big Ten schedule gives you. You just can't do it. You can't do it credibly. But at the same time, how in the hell are you going to reschedule, you know, 25 total games, whatever the number actually is here on February 1st? It's, you know, the best laid plans for these Big Ten protocols and all that stuff. It's been harder than I think even anyone could have imagined, and everyone came into this season understanding full well that what they were trying to do here was going to be really, really difficult.
Right. Thanks, Brian.
No problem.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll bring in Tom in. We'll talk a little bit of football with him. That's coming up next on Golden Black Radio. Gridiron Metalworks is your go-to for grill grates and griddles and home and office decor branded to your favorite team, Purdue. Browse the designs that incorporate Purdue's logo and the Boilermaker Special in stainless or carbon steel, as well as other outdoor goods such as planters, flower pots, and fire pits. This is your solution for the hard to shop for and even featured on Purdue alum Brian Cardinal's Grill. Visit gridironmetal.com. The podcast is brought to you in part by JFQ Lending. With interest rates below 3%, there has never been a better time to lock in a low fixed interest rate on your mortgage. You'll never need to think about refinancing again. Sit it and forget it. And with JFQ Lending, you are guaranteed to get the highest level of customer service. They have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau and more than 3,000 five-star reviews. Give Kyler Compliment a call today at 323-607-8802 or email Kyler directly at kkoppelman, K-K-O-P-P-E-L-M-A-N, at jfqlending.com. JFQ Lending Incorporated, equal access lender, licensed in more than 40 states. www.jfqlending.com. On the far end of Main Street in downtown Lafayette, you'll find East End Grill, industrial and classic. The restaurant is built like a steakhouse, but handles like a bistro. East End Grill's menu includes creative starters, simple chopped salads, burgers, fresh fish and steaks, and the signature shrimp and grits. The staff prepares every item from scratch and emphasizes simple meals that incorporate fresh, local, and seasonal ingredients. A warm and inviting dining room features a cozy bar that includes a great selection of craft beer, inspired cocktails, and a robust and expanding wine list. Whatever your entertainment needs are, a cocktail at the bar, dinner with family, or a special event at the private dining room, the energized and attentive staff is here for you. East End Grill in downtown Lafayette, welcome to our table. Going Black Radio is brought to you by Home Field Apparel. Home Field makes premium collegiate apparel with vintage Purdue designs with incredibly soft and comfortable clothing printed and owned in Indianapolis. That's homefieldapparel.com for your premium Purdue apparel with vintage designs. Check it out today.
Welcome to Golden Black Radio as we take a look at this week in Purdue athletics.
Kyle here with Tom. We expect the Boilermakers to get back out on football field. It would seem, Tom, that it might be the indoor football field if you look at what it looks like outside here in West Lafayette later on this month. So here's my question for you. Since the season ended, and man, it feels like it ended yesterday, even though it was a couple of months ago now, since the season ended to now on the verge ish of the start of spring practices, where has Purdue improved the most?
I mean, having not really put on any pads, obviously, in practice, just surface-wise, Kyle, I think you have to look, you gotta look at the defense, right? I mean, the additions there, staff-wise, bringing in Brad Lambert to run the defense, Mark Hagan as well, the D-line coach, Ron English coach, and cornerbacks. You got to like that trio and the experience that they bring to that side of the ball. And then personnel-wise, two additions from the transfer portal, Joseph Anderson, the defensive end from South Carolina, and O.C. Brothers, the linebacker from Auburn. And then Yanni Karloftis, the true freshman, is enrolled. We'll go through spring practice, too. So, I mean, front seven-wise, the addition of those two transfers and Karloftis, we have to like at least the early paper returns on how that defense could be better.
Yeah, that's the potential for three starters in 2021 that have joined the team here over the last couple of months. It does seem to me, especially with those two transfers and then, you know, Karloftis as well, that Purdue has some versatility, the potential at least for some versatility in its front seven. Does that seem like a chance to you also?
I think so. You have some potential moving parts there. That's what's going to make the spring a little bit fascinating to see what Brad Lambert wants to do here. First, from a base scheme standpoint, he's played a lot of different schemes in his various stops in his career. I think a 4-3 base, it wouldn't shock me if maybe that's the go-to for Purdue initially in 2020-21. Again, I like this front seven potential there. Joseph Anderson, I said he's an end. Maybe he grows into a tackle. What do you do with DeMarcus Mitchell? Do you keep him a linebacker? Could he maybe, Kyle, become a defensive end? Can you imagine a bookend of DeMarcus Mitchell and George Karloftis? To me, that's pretty interesting. Again, I'm just thinking aloud here. Jack Sullivan can play end tackle. Same with Branson Dean. We talked a little bit about the linebackers, too. Karloftis, Jalen Graham, guys you can play on that edge in space, you would think. Jalen Alexander brings a lot. Samisi Fakasiecki's back for a sixth year. He can play in. He can play linebacker. So, yeah, there's experience, some proven talent. And like your initial point, Kyle, there's some versatility, too.
You know, we know sort of the personality and character of Mark Hagan and what he's like as a coach. We've seen a lot of Ron English over the years as an assistant and as a head coach. I don't know personally a lot about Brad Lambert, but it seems, I mean, you've got some veteran, no-nonsense, driven coaches here with this defensive staff. I think there's a chance there might be a little better chemistry. I get the impression that there was some dysfunction with what was going on defensively last year with an interesting personality, to say the least. You can take that both good and bad, I think, with Bob Diaco. It seems like a good mix, hopefully a better mix of personality on the defensive side of the ball for Purdue this year.
Yeah, we'll see once they start working. Sure, that chemistry hopefully has already started to develop in some informal meetings, you think, going over things in the classroom when they get a chance and are allowed to. So you're right, that chemistry element, the nebulous intangible of chemistry, we all know the importance of it, and you're exactly right, Kyle. I think we all can agree that seemed to be missing from the unit last year. I think maybe some players were miscast with some of the things Diaco wanted to do. And like I said, from the people I've talked to about Brad Lambert, I mean, he's not going to be round peg and square hole guy where he's adamant about this is my scheme and this is how we will do it, regardless of the ability levels and skill sets of the personnel. He's going to build his scheme smartly so around the level of skill and the strength of that personnel. So, again, I don't think it's going to take him longer to figure out who can do what and what scheme will work best, because like I said, that front seven in particular has got some potential, some versatility too. Now, Kyle, the big question is going to be that secondary. I think the cornerbacks in particular. I like the safeties. Cornerback, though, my friend, I mean, you know, Corey Trice, Dedrick Mackey, Giovanni Howard, he pulls his back out of the portal, but after that, it drops off quickly. I still wouldn't be shocked if maybe Purdue adds some type of transfer help at cornerback before it's all said and done.
Yeah. Out of time already, Tom. In this podcast, we will hit on spring football as we get closer to it, I am sure, here over the next couple of weeks. Thanks, man.
Take care, my friend.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll put a wrap on this podcast. We'll do that coming up next on Golden Black Radio.
It's time to boiler up and join the Bronze Squad by gearing up with the best selection of Purdue apparel in stock only at Follett's. Visit the Black and Gold Mine store across from Mackey or Follett's Purdue West on State Street for the best game day apparel from Nike, Columbia, Champion, Cutter and Buck, and more. Shop Follett's late on game day weekends. Follett's has been your Purdue game day stop since 1945. If you can't make it to the game, shop online at FollettsPurdue.com.
Often, things are worth more than they seem. For Purdue grad and NASA astronaut Jerry Ross, incredible value was found in the Purdue Alumni Visa. Not just because of the exclusive Purdue card designs, but for the unlimited cash back and out-of-this-world Visa benefits. Discover the official Purdue Alumni Visa credit card. Apply today at PurdueFed.com. Purdue Federal Credit Union. Belong where you have worth. Federally insured by NCUA.
Welcome to Golden Black Radio as we take a look at this week in Purdue athletics.
Out of time on our podcast today, be sure to check out goldandblack.com. Much more as Purdue gets ready for that game Tuesday night against Maryland. We'll be back again with this podcast next Monday as we drop our next. Be sure, of course, to look at Golden Black Radio Express delivered in the same fashion that you have subscribed here. All right, that'll do it for our show. Thanks to our sponsors, as always, and for Brian Newbert and Tom Dienhardt, I'm Kyle Charters. Thanks for listening. This is Golden Black Radio.